Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
As the writer of the Tugboat Annie stories for the Saturday Evening Post, I have often been asked the question, is Annie a real person? Actually, Annie took form as a symbol of the many American women who follow the sea. A cantankerous, lovable old seahorse who could outcuss, outfight, and outsmart any man on the waterfront.
That may be true for Tugboat Annie, but it's not true for my sister-in-law, Sharon Albert. But I went looking for something about tugboats, and apparently there is this old movie or TV something or other called Tugboat Annie. So there you have it. But I don't even think I've ever heard you swear, Sharon.
Me?
Yeah.
Oh, I could do it now, John, but I don't think you'd like it.
No, but I mean, you're not a salty sea dog out on the water.
There's plenty of swearing that goes on boats and other places, too.
Really?
Thanks for having me on.
Oh, no. Thank you for coming on.
Sure.
Now, let's see. You are a certified captain, correct?
Yeah, I have a Coast Guard captain's license, 50-ton master, which means I'm certified to drive bigger boats with more passengers.
And you can take them out onto any body of water?
Coastal, offshore. I actually didn't pay any attention to the inshore portion of the captain's license because I live in the state of Washington on Puget Sound, and we're pretty much offshore here.
So
rivers or canals, like the Suez Canal, are just, they're not in my language.
Well,
at the moment. Yeah.
No, I understand that. But I mean, when you have something like what's happened there, and this tanker gets turned around, I mean, who can I talk to? I mean, I suppose I could talk to some sort of scientist somewhere, but what fun is that when I got somebody in my family who knows a lot about boats and the water and sailing and all that kind of stuff, right? So let's go to Sharon. And we had my brother Tom and I, and you were talking yesterday, and you were telling me because of the COVID, you just said you live in Washington, that to get to Alaska, you have to obviously go through Canada if you're on land, but you can't go through Canada because of COVID and the borders closed. So you actually take people their boats up to Alaska?
Actually, the border is also closed to boats, but not necessarily to commercial transactions. So if someone has their boat in Canada and wants it to be brought here into Washington State, they need to hire a licensed captain to do that.
Gotcha.
And I'm sure Tom was telling you that he's going to be my crew. And
yes,
we're going to take a 47-foot Grand Banks up to Ketchikan, Alaska, in May. And but we won't stop. We, other than once to put fuel on the boat at the top of Vancouver Island, we'll cross the border. We'll have a float plan. We will anchor every night. We'll stop that one time for fuel and water and have groceries brought to the boat, and then we'll continue on to Alaska. So it will be commercial. It won't be, there'll be no passengers aboard it.
How long will that take?
I think it shouldn't take more than 8 days. Maybe if there's weather issues, 10 days.
Wow.
But the boat's going up to be chartered with several other boats, and they'll spend the summer up there, and the charter clients will fly into Alaska, use the boats for 2 weeks or 3 weeks, and then they'll fly home again.
Amazing.
And then if the borders open, they'll come down the way they normally would with charter clients aboard. But if it's still closed, I might get the chance to repeat that trip the opposite direction.
Which I'm sure you would like to do.
I would like to, especially because there'll be no cruise ships. And just the thought of seeing the waters of British Columbia and Alaska with no cruise ships moving through them, that thrills me no end. And
That sounds like a great time. You know, when we were talking about this Suez Canal and the Ever Given, I believe is the name of the ship, yesterday, there's been, from what I read today, a lot of improvement, quote-unquote, refloating is the word I see. Other than the obvious, what does refloating mean? What does refloating mean?
It means it is no longer attached and impeded in its movement by the ground beneath it, the sides of a canal, a rock that it could have struck. It is floating freely, and it's been moved into a lake area that is part of the canal.
It says dredgers shifted more than 950,000 cubic feet of sand and dug down nearly 60 feet. And this thing is as long, or if you laid the Empire State Building on its side, it would be
it's about the same
length. Is just one person guiding that ship?
No, it has a crew of 25, and the captain is still guiding the ship, but it had two Egyptian pilots aboard, not airplane pilots, but marine pilots, and they're pretty much consultants to the pilot maintain, or the captain maintains control of the boat, but the pilots are put on because they intimately know every inch of the water that they cover, and so they are completely familiar with the canal, and they're there to give guidance to the captain, but it's the captain who makes the calls ultimately.
Because I figured the thing is so long, some guys up at the front, if the back of the boat is 400, the back of the boat is like four football fields away.
I know.
I mean, you're going to need a real big
mile.
You're going to need a real big rear view mirror or some sort of backup camera, because that is gigantic. So how did the, you know, and I read that the canal had been widened and wide enough for two ships to pass going either way. How did this thing get grounded?
It hasn't been completely widened yet. I think they're working on it. Right now, the traffic moves only in one direction at a time. So the ships at one end will wait, you know, like crossing a narrow bridge or something.
Right.
But it's unclear. I think there'll be a long investigation into what actually happened. And today I saw the Egyptian authority disclaiming responsibility for anything that happened in the canal. But I think that, of course, everybody is going to not want their name attached to that.
I didn't do it.
I didn't do it either.
But
what's happened, the things that are obvious, was that there were high winds, and there could well have been human error, mechanical error, but that won't be clear for a long time.
Right.
But the high wind, in combination with the fact that the ship had just come through a curved part of the canal, an airplane or a boat will kind of crab into wind to reduce how much of its side is or to increase how much of its side, either way, is exposed to the wind and acting on it to move sideways. And in this case, the ship, you can see the path that it took, and it had come around a curve and then had begun to become a bit unstable, but they had crabbed a little bit to the port or to the left side. And one of the things that I read was that it wasn't so much the wind, but perhaps a lull in the wind. So their attitude towards the wind was allowing them to move forward in a straight line while the wind was up to 40 knots and acting on its port side, but there was a lull in the wind, and that caused the boat to become unstable and move in one direction or the other.
Even that size of a boat?
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
Particularly. I mean, it's so heavy, but the ships are getting taller and taller and taller because they can't get longer. They can't really get wider. They've reached the limit of engineering with steel. And so they go up in the number of containers.
Right.
And as they go up, they ride deeper in the water. Their draft is higher.
Yeah.
And our infrastructure isn't keeping up with it. So the canal, the Suez Canal, was not built for a ship that size. And they're only getting bigger.
Yeah, Sharon Albert, that's my sister-in-law, everybody, right there, telling you all about it, laying down the facts as they are, because she knows what the heck's going on. See? Told you. We'll do more with Sharon when we come back on 720 WGN. And my guest this half hour is my sister-in-law, Sharon Albert, who's a sailor and knows a lot about boating and is a captain. And we're having a great conversation about all of those things. And it's a long time since I thought about the Suez Canal, quite frankly, until all of this started. And so I started looking up some stuff, and boy, it has been at the center of international controversy, and people came close to war over it as to who was going to control it. Really quite the interesting history and continuing history with the tanker. Is that the correct term, a tanker?
It's a container ship.
I'm sorry.
A mega container ship.
Oh, wait. Hold on a second. I got something here. Okay. So I'm reading this story. Who is this from? This is from somebody. And it says, the Ever Given was successfully refloated after running aground last Tuesday in a crucial global shipping waterway, the Maritime Services provider said on Twitter. She's being secured at the moment. Why is a boat being called she? That is the sexist, the most... What the hell is that about?
Tradition, John. It's tradition.
What's a she about a container boat?
Boy, I'd love to know the answer to that. Even my boat is an it.
Good. My boat identifies as a trawler. My boat identifies as a tugboat. It's the binary of the shipping lanes.
Right.
It goes like this. I'm like, today everybody's rightfully so, I think, super sensitive about sexist terms and racial terms and things that have been in our lexicon for decades without anybody thinking about it, and I'm just calmly reading this thing, and she was secured at the moment. Well,
right.
I'm so glad to hear that. My God.
I think that's a great point, John, in that, maybe part of my signature in my email says M/V, Motor Vessel Brass Monkey, and maybe I should put the pronouns after it.
Yeah, I mean,
I hadn't thought of that.
Gosh knows, we wouldn't want her to get loose.
Right, right. It's tradition that boats are she's, and
it just struck me as like sexist. Wait, it is.
I would agree.
So tugboats are at the, if I've read the stories right, are at the core of being able to move this container ship.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, a tug would take it through the tugs would take it through the canal, and certainly I think there were 12 or 14 involved in freeing it after the dredging, and but the ship is so huge that the canal itself has an effect on it. Ships that all boats are made to move through open water. And to put something that big and wide into a constricted space like the Suez Canal causes some hydrodynamics that boat was not designed for.
Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, it was something called the bank effect, which has been repeated in several of the articles that I've read, and it's quite interesting. I always knew that when rounding a curve in a river, one should always stay to the center or to the outside, yeah. And never understood why, but it's the Bernoulli effect where the water is being displaced by the bow of the boat, and as it's displaced, the ship is passing through it, and it's a constriction, so the water is moving faster down the side of the boat, and it's causing a lower pressure area, and so by the time it comes to the stern, it can literally suck the stern into the side of the bank, which is likely part of what happened. And
wow.
Of course, the bow reacts in opposition, and that slammed into the riprap on the side of the canal, which was not designed to take that kind of a blow. So, yeah, it ended
up. There were so many tugboats out there. Some of the captains of the tugboats, I think, panicked. I had this one tugboat captain yelling,
"Iceberg, right ahead!"
He was going, "Iceberg, right ahead!" And I'm like, "No! That's not it." Okay, it's a little joke. Now, these are the tugboats in the Those are the tugboats in the today.
Celebrating.
Yeah, in the Suez. Did you catch the little crazy one at the end? I tried to separate it here. He goes, "Dug it, dug it, dug it, dug it, dug it." Hold on, where is it? Here we go. "Dug it, dug 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 it." I mean, all the other ones are just like,
A nice big sound, yeah.
And here in comes, it's like, there's the wacky tugboat.
I wonder if that's a special sound effect, and it actually has that big sound that the other ones have.
Who knows? But I want to move to sailing for a second.
Sure.
In the time that we have left, which is only just a couple of minutes, because Sharon is an unbelievable sailor, to the extent that she crewed on a sailing craft that went to Antarctica. And I distinctly remember that year, Christmas gift suggestions were Gore-Tex is always nice.
Yeah.
Who sails to Antarctica, Sharon?
Those with a sense of adventure
don't
want to get onto a cruise ship who might, because there are small cruise ships, with maybe 400 passengers that cross to Antarctica, and also there's some small expedition ships, but this was a chance to move freely around the Antarctic Peninsula.
Wow.
And explore some of the artifacts left from the Age of Exploration, and that's something that nobody is going to do on a commercial transport vessel,
right? But it was a sailboat.
It was a 62-foot sailboat.
Right.
Yeah, and it not only was it a sailboat, but it was had been built as a racing sailboat, and it had won the Whitbread in 1978. That's the Volvo Ocean Race today.
Man.
And it was built to sail in those waters. It was aluminum-hulled, and it was just a chance. I couldn't pass up a chance to sail on a boat like that to go around Cape Horn into Antarctica. But yes, Gore-Tex figured highly into that. It was the look du jour.
Well, not only that, but people got to stay warm. And you had been, you've been following the sailing for years. How long ago was it that you first got? Well, I think we're going to run out of time. But anyway, Sharon, I got to tell you, you are absolutely amazing. I don't know if I've ever told you that, but you are absolutely amazing. And I think anybody who's been listening for the last 25 minutes or so would totally agree. I mean, you really know your stuff. And it made this show tonight a lot better with having you on to explain to me what was going on because, we're family. So Thanks. And tell Tom,
thank
now
you,
I
un-
t- tell Tom, my brother, now I understand why he's crew.
He will be crew, but he'll be great crew.
And, I'm sure he will. Talk to you guys soon.